Thank you, Mark. Sometimes it's hard to tell the intentions of someone's heart. Eli was having trouble telling the intentions of Hannah. She was there crying. And that can be true with us. I had a situation once where Jackie and I, we were at home. Catherine was 3 years old. Christian was probably around 8. And Ben was 12. It's Christmas time. And we're hanging around the house, and all at once there's a knock on the back door. And I'm clicking, and my click doesn't clicker. So why don't we go to the next slide? If somebody wants to try to help me get a clicker that actually works, I think, first slide, maybe. No slides. Nope. Can we go back to the first slide? Anyway, so, taking away a little of my thunder. So there we go. We have Santa Claus. I need everybody to see Santa Claus. So Santa Claus showed up at the back door. And we are, wow, this is kind of fun. Santa's at the back door. Come on in, Santa. So Santa walks in. Ho, ho, ho. I mean, he's got the garb from the feet all the way up, you know, to the head. And so this is kind of exciting. Santa's in the house, and he's sitting there. And so finally I kind of get my breath, and I, you know, look over to Jackie like, yeah, hey, what's going on? I mean, who's this? And she's looking at me like, hey, what's going on? Who's this? And about that time, is it working now?
I think so.
About that time, all I could think of, we got a bad Santa. And so I'm thinking, where's my hardware? Where's everything else in the house? I'm plotting, how am I going to take this guy down? And so everybody else is still kind of having fun. Jackie's not too happy either because she can tell I'm not real happy. And the kids seem to be happy, but Santa was going on. So all through my head, I'm going, is this bad Santa? Is this good Santa? I don't know. Anyway, so finally, fortunately, Santa did leave. He actually knew the name of Catherine. You know, hi, Catherine. Hi, Ben. How, Christian? So, you know, I thought he's really cased us out pretty well. Turns out he left. Nobody got injured. And we found out that Phil Owens, who used to be a member here, decided he was going to come over and wear the Santa suit and give us a nice surprise. Well, that wasn't so nice in our brains. So it's hard to know the intentions of the heart. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about this morning. I'm going to talk about two different passages, one in the Old Testament, which is just read to you, and the other would be one in the New Testament. The passage in the Old Testament is the story of Hannah. And Hannah is an amazing person, but let me begin by just talking about Hannah's husband. Hannah's husband was a very he was a man of means, and you could tell this because it talked about his lineage, which is a very important thing to the Hebrews, is where you came from. And this is actually very important in this story here. He had two wives, and, you know, it cost a lot of money to have one wife, let alone two wives. So that really was a distinction. He had to be a pretty rich guy to have actually two wives. He gave healthy portions to everybody. Again, another sign, this was a very well-to-do man. And Hannah was, she had almost everything. She had a husband that was very well-to-do, respected. Both of them were very faithful in worship at Shiloh. They were just good Hebrews, good Jews. They were faithful. But she did not have one thing that was very important in that point in time. She could not provide her husband, who loved her very much, with a son or a child. And that really hurt. In this culture, that was a critical thing to not be able. It's probably why Elkanah had two wives, is because maybe Hannah could not provide what needed. Because if he couldn't get a son, that would be the end of his line. It would be over for him. So, one of the problems with not having a son is Hannah, let's see here. You know, I have moved forward. Okay, there's the rest of that scripture. So one of the problems that Hannah had is that she had Peninnah, who was provoking her all the time. I've got kids and you don't have kids. And that was very difficult on Hannah to have to live with that type of environment. You know, you're every time that she had a chance, she probably was able to poke her and to remind her of the shame that she has on her. And so that kind of wore on Hannah very much. It was a miserable situation, and it was so much so that she ended up needing to go to God in prayer and to seek. So let's see, her rival, I'm going to turn around so I can read. Let's back up here. She used to provoke her grievously, and so then she would, Hannah wept and would not eat. So Hannah stopped eating, she was crying, and she was very dejected by this. And so there she goes to the temple of God, she goes to the steps there, and she starts to pray, and she weeps bitterly. One of the things you can't help but notice about Hannah is she had a deep personal faith in God. The more, we're not going to read all the text to cover some of the other areas that would talk about that, but you could tell in the Old Testament, it's kind of unusual for you to find someone that believed that God would listen to them and provide them answers, to have this type of relationship with the God of the Old Testament, who he thinks kind of a difficult God, or one that's more kind of judgmental. But this is a God that's very sensitive, and she feels that he's going to listen to her. So she vowed a vow. She said, God, if you would just get rid of this affliction from me, I will give my son to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor will touch his head. You know, the ramifications of her doing that were kind of significant. Because if some of you that might know about Eli was probably not the most, you kind of had to wonder about what it would be like to grow up in his family. And we'll talk about that here just in a second. So all that, let me see what the scripture says here. I'll give him no, as she continued to pray before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, her lips were moving. So Eli figured that she must be a drunken woman. That was the thing that he inferred from this, that she had probably had too much to drink, and now here she is. And so he's ready to correct her for having too much to drink. Hannah's been driven to despair because of hopelessness in her situation, and she couldn't provide a male child. And we have a hard time, you know, actually sometimes appreciating the shame that she was going through. So Eli accuses her of being drunk, and then she replies to him, please do not regret your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. So she tries to tell Eli, you know, I'm not a worthless person. Fact is, I've been praying to the Lord. I'm a very faithful person. And you kind of wonder, well, why in the world did Eli even assume that maybe she was drunken? You know, I don't know. You know, when you first read it, you don't really pick up that that's a big issue. But then when you look a little further, you find out that later on that Eli's sons were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. And that's the exact same word that Hannah used to describe herself. I'm not a worthless woman, yet Eli's sons were worthless men. And we know that they slept with women that at the gate there, they had sexual relations with them. They took food that was supposed to be sacrificed. That was one of the reasons why God killed them, is their total disregard for God. And so Eli's background might have made him think that, you know, what kind of frame of reference did he use to make these type of decisions? Do not regard me as a worthless woman. Here's a little bit more. The sin of the young men, this is his sons, was very great in the sight of the Lord. The men treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. Eli was old. He kept hearing all that his sons were doing in Israel and how they lay with the women that were serving at the entrance. The sons of Eli were worthless men, and they did not know the Lord. If you look at his situation, you kind of wonder if maybe from that context, that's where he came up with his way of approaching Hannah. What motives do we use? What's in the back of our hide? What causes us to react the way we are, the way we do? One of the things that I think about is in Matthew, Jesus said, "If you then who are evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to you when you ask of them?" You know, even I don't believe Eli was evil, but even those that don't have the strongest heart for God at times, they can still give a great gift to someone. Anyway, so Hannah, she left, she ate, and immediately her countenance was changed. She ate, she was happy. She treated this as if God had totally answered her prayer. God is going to give me a son. And that's the way she walked away. What an example of faith. Someone that would believe. And we know what immediately happens. She did become pregnant. In fact, is we know that she ended up having a... let's see what verse I have up here. Yes. She ended up having Samuel. And Samuel, you might call, was a kingmaker. He ended up anointing King David. One of the promises from Abraham is that... let me just read the promise. "Behold, my covenant is with you and all that shall be... and you shall be a father of multitude of nations. And no longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name should be called Abraham, for I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into a nation, and kings shall come from you." And this is where God is going to start the line of the kings. And that's very important to Jesus even. As you look, the book of the New Testament begins the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. In Revelation it ends, "I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you that these things for the churches, I am the root and the descendant of David, the bright and morning star." God did some great things through Hannah as she approached God and asked for a blessing, and Eli shared it. Let me talk about another scene in the New Testament. This is when a situation that you're probably familiar with, when Simon the Pharisee has invited Jesus to come dine with him. And Jesus goes and dines, and then a woman of the street, probably a prostitute, comes, and she enters in, and she's overcome with emotion as Jesus is lying there reclining to eat, and she cries all over his feet. She takes down her hair, which is a big deal. She cleans his feet with her hair, and then she takes out an expensive ointment and pours it on his feet. And so this is the scene that we want you to think about now. Jesus is not a very, you know, I want you to appreciate Simon to a certain degree. He's a Pharisee. A lot of times we don't give them the credit. But one of the things that's true is that the Jews were exiled from Israel because they would not honor God by following his law. And some people, after they were exiled, figured it out and said, you know, we better start honoring God. And so they got the Torah out and they started studying it. And they started trying to live by it. And they figured out a lot of the things it means, and they added a little bit to it to help them honor God by doing the right thing, because they did not want to be exiled again. That's the history that brought us to the Pharisees. The Pharisees were those people. But maybe they've taken it a little bit too far, obviously. So much so that now you have this man named Simon, who certainly prayed daily, who tithed properly, who probably said no to most things that a lot of people said yes to. He was a man that was diligent, but he was not a fan of Jesus. When Jesus came in, he did not give him a kiss. You know, I'm not sure how much we appreciate that. I know I appreciated that more when I went down to Chile a few years ago, and I go down and they say, well, you know, whenever you meet people, you need to, at least the women, you need to give them a kiss. And it's like, well, I'm not sure about that. I don't really want to do that. But So the people I stand with kind of heard that, and they kind of spread the message, hey, Ron's really not comfortable with that. So all the women, when we come down there, they just kind of line up. You know, I'd walk in, and I'd have to kiss and kiss and kiss every single person in the room. And then when you leave, you have to do the exact same thing. And it was, I mean, I did not like that at all. So I might not go down there again. But it was a custom. It was a custom. And we have a hard time appreciating some of these customs. Jesus was slapped in the face by Simon. He did not give him some of the normal things you get. I mean, his feet, the feet were so dirty that in that world, you had to wash the feet. And so he did not honor Jesus at all by washing his feet. And a rabbi, you actually would probably put oil on a rabbi's head. That's kind of a nice token of appreciation that you would do. But Simon did not do that. When the woman came in and started touching his feet, immediately Simon knew that Jesus could not be a prophet. Because a prophet wouldn't let someone like that actually do that. There's no way that that would happen. That's what he believed. And so Jesus turned to him and he said, Simon, I have something to tell you. And it's the story, that the parable that we're all familiar with. Two people owe a debt. One is a very heavy debt, the other is very light. They get forgiven. Who's going to love more? Simon, well, it's the one that has the more debt that's forgiven. And you've judged rightly. And then he talks about the woman, how the woman has done those honors that you didn't afford me. She truly loves more. And so he judged that Jesus was not a prophet. So the real contrast here, you know, whenever I look at this, I think that one of the things that we might want to contrast is the contrast between Simon and the contrast between Jesus, how they received the woman. One has an understanding of righteousness that causes him to distance himself from the woman. The other has an understanding of righteousness that causes him to move toward the woman with forgiveness and a blessing of peace. However, I think the context actually would suggest that the real contrast here is between Simon and the woman and how they respond to Jesus. Because if you looked at some of the words right before we got to this story, you would find that sinners were receiving Jesus and John the Baptist, while the Pharisees, they were rejecting the purpose of God. Simon failed to show the most common elements of hospitality to Jesus, while the woman was extending incredible amount of hospitality. And the parable reveals that the real issue that makes the difference, one has received forgiveness from so much sin, and the other doesn't have such a deep feeling of forgiveness. I like to highlight the actions of Hannah and the sinful woman. Hannah ran to the steps of the temple with prayers and tears to ask for mercy from the one true God, and God blessed her through Eli. The sinful woman ran to the feet of Jesus with tears of joy to praise him for the forgiveness he had given her. And he blessed her as well, but not Simon. Eli engaged in a discussion with Hannah because she came to the steps of the temple. And Simon would not engage the woman who came to the feet of Jesus. When we run out of luck, we often run to places or people to pour out our heart, looking for comfort, help, justice, or maybe just plain forgiveness. Eli wasn't very good at being a judge, actually. Eli wasn't very good at being a father or a priest, quite often. His family was messed up. Yet he did give a blessing to Hannah that in turn blessed the whole world. Simon was repulsed by the deeds of a sinner and didn't want to engage her. A lot of things keep us from engaging, getting to know someone who's significantly different than we are. We have nothing in common. We clearly have sinful habits. We do not move away. Do we move away with disgust? Or do we move toward them with a message from God? We have a lot of new faces here, seems like every Sunday. Or it could just be that I've met you four or five times and I forgot who you were. But that's a different story. You know, I appreciate people like Hunter Cornett, who will engage anybody and everybody that comes through the door. You know, he's very good at and actually getting to a deeper level, finding out. I know that, but yes, even getting to a deeper level with people. He's an incredible person at doing that type of thing, taking it to a different level. I'd like to tell you a little bit, and I have, let me see where I am with my slides. There I am. Let me tell you just a little bit about my background, and I kind of want to tie this all together. You know, I grew up in Western Kentucky, poor family, never met my father, drugs, dating scene, no church except maybe visit it one or two times a year. So that kind of in a synopsis, first 18 years of my life, you know, it's not totally covering everything. But the one thing about it, even though I was into drugs and all those things, is I read the Bible, for some reason, a lot. And I prayed every single day. But I didn't go to church, didn't really know church people. But that's usually what was going on. And I smoked drugs, cocaine, anything that I could do, I would do it. And so I came to UK, my first year here at UK, ended up having a very bad LSD experience on like December 13th, 1973, not that I remember. And it totally changed my life. Not that it changed my life, because it about killed me. But from that point on, the one thing that I knew was, you know, Ron, if you die, you're probably going to go to hell. And that's where I was. And so I'm trying to reconstruct my life from there on out. I get a job at UPS and stay in Lexington, and I start working there from 74 and continue 75, continue 76, 77, 78. So 4 years I'm working at UPS trying to figure out what in the world's going on. I'm still doing drugs, dating, whatever. Sell. I'm a drug dealer. Whatever I can, I do it. And so in 1978, I ask someone a question. I say, you know, hey, what's fornication mean? Because I've been reading about it in the Bible. He tells me what it was, so I break up with my girlfriend and tell her why. And now the word gets back to my hometown, you know, the people I know. Hey, Mader's getting a little bit, my name's Ron Mader, in case you don't know me. Mader's getting a little bit crazy on us. He's not doing the normal things that we're supposed to be doing. And so that got to someone who had become a Christian. She sent me a long letter. You need to go to church. So Yellow Pages, Southside Church of Christ. So somehow got the nerve. I came to Southside Church of Christ about August of 1978, and 42 years ago. And it was nice. Visited a few people, attended, found out that my boss at UPS and my boss's boss at UPS actually worshipped here. And some of the guys in the load, I was a long timer at UPS, which is rare for the load. I mean, I'm a part timer, and some of the people that were loading, they actually went here. But anyway, so I came, visited a few times. It was nice, and then a significant thing was going to happen. Is a friend of mine wanted me to quit work, and we were going to move and start a business. I thought, okay, well that sounds good. So I was leaving work one day, and Tom Conway, who was one of the, in the college group, he was one of the ones here, ended up saying, hey, yeah, I'm going to be leaving Friday. And he said, oh, wow, why don't you come to church Wednesday night? Okay. So I go to church on Wednesday, which was like the next day. And Ken Durham, who was the campus minister, said, hey, afterwards, why don't we go get some coffee and desserts right down here at Jerry's? Okay, I'll do that. No problem. So we go there, and so they start talking a little bit about them. So they finally start to find out a little bit about me. And so after Ken hears it, he says, Ron, you really need to stay here with us. Don't go. I want you to stay here. And I'd never heard anybody actually treat me like that, that they really felt. I says, you need us. We can give you what you're looking for. We can help you, what you've been looking for. And as we came back, and what was funny is he said that, and I said, okay. And he said, "No, Ryan, we really want you to stay here." Well, I just said, "Okay, I mean, I'll do it." And that was it. I stayed here on the way driving back to the parking lot. I mean, I was, they couldn't tell, I was crying like crazy in the back seat. So it was in here. Well, by the way, I was going to show you, what in the world did that guy look like? I forgot this. There of me, whenever I ran track, you can see me, I'm the lie there with the hair. Yeah. And when I was very good at track, so I was in the state meet every single year, and so there we were. You see I'm not the tall guy, but my hair at one point actually touched my belt. So anyway, I'm probably not the person that you would have seen and said, you know, that guy is interested in God. Probably wouldn't have been, but that was the case. I was so interested in God and was so looking, and I was so doing sinful things. I was just very, very confused, and I needed someone to show me the Bible. The next night, I had my very first Bible study with a human being, and after Ken listened to it just about an hour and a half, he said, "You need to be baptized tonight," and so I was baptized the very next day, and the rest is somewhat history. We have the most incredible gift that's ever been given, the pearl of great price. And we know that this is true, but the stuff that fills our days takes away sometimes from the feeling of the amazing grace that we have. We need to wake up every day and remind ourselves of the forgiveness that we have received. Jesus said, "My food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to accomplish His work." Do you not know? I better turn here. Do you not know? Do you not say there are yet 4 months, yet comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white with the harvest. But we need to wake up every day and remind ourselves of the forgiveness we received. We need to remember the amazement that God would actually forgive you and forgive me. That's amazing. And we need to remind ourselves every day so that when people ask you about what you believe, there's a lot more emotion involved because of the excitement of what we have. We need to pray that we can have the sensitivity to see a struggling sinner who wants to be a child of God or needs to be blessed by the body of Christ. And we need to find opportunity to ask that struggling child of God about things that really matter. Ed, who's just recently baptized here, is an older gentleman. He was in the parking lot down here. Somebody walked up and just said, "Hey, do you know where you're going to be today if you died?" He was Jewish, and he didn't really know the answer. And within a short period of time, he walks through the door, and he was baptized here recently. You just don't know what's going on out there. If we begin every day with our eyes focused on the Lord and pray that He will help our eyes see the struggling Hannahs, the struggling Rons, the struggling Eds, I believe that He will open our eyes to the hearts of His children who are looking for God's help and God's forgiveness. Matthew 9, when He saw the crowds, He had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless. They were like sheep without a shepherd. And He said to His disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest." You know, we need to engage. We need to engage with our culture, with our people, because we do have something to share with them. We have the most amazing gift that's ever been given, and we don't want to keep it ourselves. We want to really share it. I entitled my sermon today, "Pray for 2020 Vision," because that's kind of catchy, but, you know, maybe pray for 2020 Spiritual Vision. That's what I want for my life this year, and that's what I hope maybe we can have for our lives. Let's have vision. Let's see the people that need the hope that they have. This morning, if there's anything that we can do for you, if you're somewhere along this road and maybe we can help you get all the way, we would love for you to let us know that you're looking for God, you're looking to understand Him better, you're looking for the salvation maybe that you're hearing me talk about. So this would be a great time. There's going to be people praying in the back. You can come up here and talk to me or anybody. We'd love to be helpful for you. But here in a minute, we're going to stand and sing as we're led by Keith. Let's stand.